I was just really naive because I was like, oh, you know, I can draw, I can paint, I know I can do these things, I could just throw it together into a portfolio, quote unquote, because it really wasn't a great portfolio, and just, you know, show up and show them what I have, and I'm gonna get in. So it wasn't until my very first portfolio review that I realized, oh my gosh, I have this whole thing wrong, and my confidence actually dropped very, very low. I was really shaken because I realized that I felt like I didn't have what it took to, you know, enter these programs.
Hi, I'm Daphne Cohn. Welcome to the Creativity Habit Podcast, where I have conversations with the artists and makers who use creativity to make this world a better, saner, more beautiful place to be. Andrea Pippins didn't know you could make a living making art until she saw the film Boomerang, starring Halle Berry as an art director. She didn't take any art classes until her senior year in high school, and she applied 3 times to the Tyler School of Art at Temple University before being accepted. Today, Andrea has clients around the world, including the National Museum of African American History and Culture, Lincoln Center, and Free People. Her work has been featured in O, the Oprah Magazine, Family Circle, and the Huffington Post, and she's the author of 3 books, including the coloring book I Love My Hair and her newest book, Young, Gifted, and Black. This is Andrea's story from just starting out to being a freelancer to living back on her mom's couch, to being a full-time successful artist living in Sweden with her husband and baby boy. In this interview, we talk about the best thing to do when just getting started, exactly what Andrea does to stay grounded and creative under tight deadlines, dealing with rejection again and again and again, how going natural changed her idea of beauty, the one question she wished she'd been asked as a teenager, and how to share your work and then let it go. May you enjoy this conversation and may it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Hello, Andrea. Welcome to the Creativity Habit Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Hello.
The way that I begin every podcast is with your creativity story as a little girl. So, how did creativity show up for you as a little girl?
Wow. You know, it was really just me coloring and drawing. I used to go to work with my mother, who worked at a sewing studio in Washington, D.C. And I remember being surrounded by a lot of colors and patterns and textures and fabric and just fashion. And I do remember that, like, informing my drawings, just, you know, being around all these beautiful, amazing women. So that was something that I would draw a lot. But it's funny because I went into art and design. I went to graphic design, doing illustration now. But the biggest thing that I loved doing as a little girl was reading and writing my own stories. I love to tell stories. I love to, like, make up a scenario for just, like, you know, a random playtime activity. So that it's interesting that now I'm doing books, because that was something that I really loved doing, was just writing and telling stories.
Well, it's also interesting because so much of what's important to you is about creating things that give others, especially girls and women, the chance to tell their own story. So it's
Absolutely.
yeah. I know that art, that you didn't take a lot of art classes, that you actually didn't take your first art class until you were a senior in high school. And I've heard you say a couple different times that you didn't know about graphic design really until you saw Halle Berry playing the role of Angela in the film Boomerang, where Angela was an art director and an artist. And one of the things that you said it wasn't until I started applying for schools that I really learned about careers in graphic design or what was called commercial art or graphic art at that time. What stood out for me about that was, yes, you'd done some drawing as a little girl, but mostly writing and reading. You hadn't taken any art until your senior year of high school, and yet something, you had the confidence somehow to then apply for the Tyler School of Art at Temple University. Where do you think that came from?
You know, looking back, I have no idea. I guess I was just naive. I didn't realize that in order to get into those programs that a lot of people either had really exceptional talent, even if they hadn't taken any art classes or gone to like art camp, or they were students who had all this experience in taking art classes and doing the art activities after school or during the summer. I was just really naive because I was like, oh, you know, I can draw, I can paint, I know I can do these things, I could just throw it together into a portfolio, quote unquote, because it really wasn't a great portfolio, and just, you know, show up and show them what I have, and I'm going to get in. So it wasn't until my very first portfolio review that I realized, oh my gosh, I have this whole thing wrong, and my confidence actually dropped very, very low. I was really shaken because I realized that I felt like I didn't have what it took to, you know, enter into these programs. So, yeah, initially it just felt like, oh, I can do this. And then I learned that, okay, I need to put in some more work, and that I was dedicated to it. I was very committed to getting into the Tyler School of Art. So, you know, I made a portfolio that was stronger, you know, worked at it and presented it after two more times and finally got in.
And that's an important thing, an important point, is that you applied, you didn't get in, mm-hmm. and then you reapplied two more times after that. So even with your confidence dropping from realizing, oh my gosh, I'm like not in the same, at the same level as these other people who are applying. One, you stayed persistent. And two, there was something that in you that said, no, don't give up. Do you know like what had you keep going even when your confidence was low? And you felt like, I don't measure up to these people?
You know, I don't know if it was because it felt like a challenge. Because what's interesting is that I applied to the Pratt Institute in New York and also the University of Akron, because those were the other two schools that had graphic design programs that I was interested in. And University of Akron, I was like, oh, I don't really want to go that far. I got accepted, but I didn't really want to go that far. And then Pratt Institute, I was very much interested in it, but it was very expensive. So I think that it was, you know, one, a challenge. I was like, I'm going to get into this program at Temple, but also it was my top choice. It was, you know, close enough to home so that I felt like I could go home on the weekends if I wanted to. And I was just really impressed with the work that they had. So I felt like it just felt like it was the right place for me to be. And I think I also wanted to just prove that I could get into that program, that I belong there.
And, you know, this speaks to definitely part of who you are, because I've also heard you say how after college, one of the things that you did was you showed your portfolio to anyone who would see it. And I think mm-hmm. one of the reasons that we don't do that is we're so afraid of rejection. We're so afraid of putting our stuff out there. And here, you'd already been rejected twice from the school that you ended up graduating from. And there's clearly something, you were clearly okay with rejection to some degree, that you were able to both keep applying to that school and then after school, after you graduated, to go around and show your portfolio to anybody who would see it. So what was that experience mm-hmm. like, showing it over and over again to anyone?
You know, it was fun. I mean, it was a lot of work because it was exhausting going around New York City. But before I graduated from college, we were already doing that because it was something that our professors were encouraging us to do as much as possible, even before we were graduating. So I was going to portfolio reviews. I was meeting with local design firms in the area. And I was enjoying it. I enjoyed talking about my work. I enjoyed meeting these new people. Even if people weren't interested, I felt that I was learning from the experience. So the more that I did it, the more my confidence was really, you know, growing. I got better speaking about my work. I also learned how to navigate different scenarios, different situations, because there might be one person who's giving me 10 minutes to talk about my work because they're doing a favor for a friend. Or there might be someone who's taking their whole lunchtime to speak with me. So it's like an hour long. And also kind of gauging who might be interested or if they're losing interest. So I got to, you know, really understand or get the cues from the different people that I was meeting with. So it became this kind of fun performance thing for me. I don't know. It really helped me just learn how to talk about my ideas and communicate what I was interested in. And I think it really helped me, you know, make connections beyond just trying to get a job. Because a lot of times these were opportunities where it wasn't going to result in me getting a job. It was just informational interviews. So I made these connections with people who were like, oh, you know, she's interesting, or she has, you know, cool ideas. Let me introduce her to somebody else, or, you know, maybe we can do some freelance work together later in the future. To your point about rejection, as you were asking the question, like, yeah, where did that come from? Because I'm not afraid of rejection. I feel like I've heard no so much. And sometimes it's like, oh, okay, well, that person's not interested. That's okay. I can just, you know, I'll try again in this other area. And it might have come from my mother, because I remember just in my younger years trying out for things or being interested in things and giving up so quickly. And I remember my mom saying, you know, you can't get discouraged so easily like that. You got to, you know, keep going. Be resourceful. Find out more information. Try something else. And I remember her saying that, and I can't remember what the scenario was, but I remember her saying that to me, and since then I just was like, okay, I'm just going to keep trying and see what happens, because I have nothing to lose, you know, if I just keep going again.
It's amazing how what people say, and especially, of course, our parents, how when what they say, even they may not even say it that many times, but how they can lodge in our psyche, in our way of viewing the world, and change the way we are in the world. Like that mm-hmm. Your mom would say that to you, and it prepared you for the life that you have today in such a valuable way. And is
absolutely.
Yeah. So, but speaking of, so there, that was going well. And then early on in your career as a freelancer, you were also running a blog called Fly Girl, and you had that for a while. And I know that you mentioned that you showcased your work on this blog, which got you some jobs, and you also showcased the work of a lot of other artists. One of the things that you said in an interview was that you ended up, one of the big mistakes you learned from that was that you ended up showcasing other people's work maybe too much because you started to not get as many jobs. And you say, not realizing this then kept me from actively promoting and getting my work out there as one should when they are trying to get more work. So eventually the freelance opportunity slowed down, and I had to face the reality that I had to look for a full-time job. When I couldn't find one, I had to move back home with my mom. It was a really rough time for me. So what was it like having graduated and had jobs and really starting to make it on your own as a freelancer to then go back home? Home at that point? Like, what lesson did you learn from that period?
Oh, man. Well, the way that it worked, I was actually, I had worked for 5 years professionally as a graphic designer, gone back to school to get my master's, and decided, well, I went back to school to get my master's so that I could teach full-time as a design professor. But towards the end of my graduate school period, I was like, you know what, I'm doing some freelance stuff and I really, really enjoy it. Let's see how long I can do this before I start applying to full-time teaching jobs. You know, I love to do the freelance thing full-time. And it wasn't happening. You know, that was a time when I should have been really promoting myself and using that blogging platform to showcase my work. And I wasn't as much as I should have, but because of that, you know, it didn't result in me getting a lot more freelance work because I was in a different state of mind, and this is like 2009, so blogging is still fairly new in essence, and how to use that platform was still fairly new. I didn't really understand the power of that platform, that space that I had created. So I didn't understand how to even use it as a way to promote my own work. It wasn't even something that I really understood at that time. Then I didn't have the language. I didn't have the tools and the skills to really see, oh, this is how I can talk about my work and what I want to create. So, yes, I had to kind of reshuffle and rethink things because I had my rent to pay and I had other bills to pay. So I had to move back home. And I guess the biggest lesson for me was, it's such a hard question to answer because it was going home really helped me. It really helped me to rethink the next steps. But as far as a lesson, it's just maybe being really focused and clear about my intentions with what I was creating, what I was putting my time and energy on or in. You know, the blog, I loved working with Fly. I put so much time into that site. I was posting about 3 posts a day and I was doing everything myself. And I guess I didn't really ever think, okay, you know, what am I getting from this? What are the results that I want to have? Excuse me. I guess being more strategic about what I was putting out into the world, I think, was probably the biggest lesson.
Yeah, that is a big lesson because it can be really easy for us to keep moving forward on the things that we love, like posting 3 times a day to a blog, without necessarily stopping to ask, well, what is the big vision here and how is this contributing to that? Yeah,
exactly.
Did you come away then from that time with, it sounds like you did, but with a clear vision of where you did want to go? Or was that something that still had to evolve as time went on?
It did. It took some time to evolve because I did end up getting a full-time teaching position and was there at that particular institution for about 3 years. And I was still working on the blog and still doing freelance, but it took some time for me to really kind of hone in on what I saw myself doing. And I wasn't really sure if it had anything to do with the blog anymore, but I did realize that, you know, I had this following, and I really don't like to use that word, but I had this like loyal fan base, people who have supported the blog, people who have been buying my artwork, and people who have been, who've like turned into clients, design clients. So just, you know, thinking about, I guess, serving this group of people who have really kind of ushered me into the new work that I was going to be doing. So I think that really started to become this thing that was percolating in the background as I was, you know, doing this full-time job and really starting to think about what was next for me.
So speaking of the new work then, we'll move into that because so you worked at a full-time job and then you made the leap to become a full-time artist. So I want to ask specifically something about how within a month after leaving your job as a full-time artist, leaving your job to be a full-time artist, you had landed a book deal for what became the coloring book, I Love My Hair. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of the dream of the person who says, I'm going to leave my job, I'm going to go do my own thing, and then within a month, I'm going to have a book deal. What was that like after having gone all the way back, you know, gone down to I'm living back with my mom to figure things out and because I got to pay my bills, to I'm working full time, to now I'm on my own and I have a book deal?
Man, it was at the time, and looking back, it felt amazing. It was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening. But it was a lot of, there were a lot of things that had to happen for that moment to transpire. You know, prior to that, I had submitted several book proposals that were rejected over the years. I had, tried and experimented with so many different things. I was, working or selling art at art markets to see if that was something that would work for me, selling stuff on Etsy. I was going to art workshops, a lot of events and meeting different people. And it was at an event when I was teaching at the Maryland Institute College of Art. There was a workshop for some graduate students that I was invited to just kind of sit in and see what they were doing. They were doing illustration. And it was Leah Rena Gorin, I think I'm saying her name correctly. She was doing a presentation, and she, along with Julia Rothman and another woman named Rachel Cole, they have a group that they call Ladies Drawing Night. And they meet, or they would meet every Thursday, I think it was, to just get together and draw. And they would post online on Instagram what they would create. And I was following that. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's, super cool. So at the end of her presentation, I went up to Leah and I said, hey, I love what you do. I love your art, your illustrations. And I love Ladies Drawing Night. And she's like, oh yeah, we're coming out with a new book, and we invite different artists to come up and join us and talk about what inspires them and, participate in our Ladies Drawing Night. And it was about a week later that I got an email from Julia Rothman inviting me to be a part of their Ladies Drawing Night feature for the book. So, it's this thing where I happen to be at this event, I introduce myself, I say hello, love what you're doing, and then it leads to this invitation. And then at this Ladies Drawing Night event, Rachel Cole, who was an art director at a children's book company, which I didn't know at the time, she's just sitting there, we're all drawing. She's like, hey, does anyone have any ideas for any children's books? And I remember sitting there just kind of bubbling on the inside, like, oh my gosh, I would love to do a children's book. Something I've always wanted to do. But I didn't have any ideas at that time. But I did know that I wanted to do a coloring book. So it wasn't until a few months later that I reached out to her. I sent her an email, said, hey, I remember you asked this question. I do have some ideas. Here they are, one of them being a coloring book. And then she emailed me back saying, hey, I'm going to send this to my editor, but, no promises. Don't get excited. And then another week goes by. They're like, hey, we think there's some good stuff here. And then we talked about doing a I Love My Hair coloring book. And again, a month later, I have this book deal. But, it seems like it was really fast, and it was. But it was years and years of preparation. I mean, I Love My Hair was something that I created when I was in graduate school back in 2008. It was like a project in 2008. So 2015 was when that book deal happened. So that's, 7 years. Yeah. 7 years between those two projects kind of, coming into fruition. So, it was fast when it was, starting to happen, but it took so long for everything to come together.
And that's really, really important, because I heard the story when I first heard it. I was like, what? She had a book deal within a month? But the reality is, not only did it take a long time that you started it 7 years prior, just the work around it, but also, like you said, all the events, the networking events, Etsy, all the different things you were doing. And then on top of that, which I think is a really important point to underscore, which is that you went up to the speaker. You didn't think to yourself at the event, oh, maybe sometime I'll go up to her. You went up to her after she spoke. You acknowledged her. You appreciated it without any intention of getting anything back. So you just went up to let her know. And then you got the invitation, which led to the going and then to the book deal. So all of those things, there's so many valuable points just in that answer in terms of how we can start to build our own career or keep growing it in a healthy way. Yeah.
And another thing I'll add to that is, with the blog, with my portfolio site, with having a presence on Instagram or just, you know, an online presence in general, I didn't have to say to Leah, you know, this is my work and this is what I'm doing. It was already there. So if they, you know, were interested in learning more about me, they could go ahead and go online and see, you know, my process photos. They could see video. They could see, of course, the final work that I was creating. So I didn't necessarily have to go up to her and promote anything. That wasn't my intention anyway. But, you know, if she did want to learn more, it was already there. So that's something I really try to encourage other people. Just, you know, have your work to speak for itself. Put it out there. Create as much as you can. Share your process. Share your ideas. So you kind of have this paper trail that people can reference when they're looking for you.
Yeah, that's excellent. Share before you even know what that sharing is going to lead to. Just share. Mm-hmm. Just get it out there. Yeah.
Exactly.
When you talked about I Love My Hair, you said it started as a social campaign. Our topic was social awareness. You said, I was really intrigued by the black beauty industry and how much money black women all over the world spend on hair care products. At the time, I had been natural for 7 years and loved it, and wondered how the industry would change if more women of color embraced their coils and went natural as well. So, two questions in that. One was, how did going natural change you? And then, did your book, I Love My Hair, have the impact that you hoped that it would have around that?
Mm-hmm. Going natural changed me. It changed my idea of beauty. Because up until I cut all of my hair off, I thought, you know, long, straight hair was the ideal beauty or the ideal beauty standard. And I knew that in order to get my hair like that, it had to be relaxed. I had to use a perm relaxer in order to, you know, get it like that. And it was very corrosive to my scalp and drying and, you know, just damaging. Which is one of the reasons why I decided to go natural. It was like 2000, I think it was 2000 when I cut my hair. So there weren't natural hair blogs. There weren't definitely a lot of natural hair products or magazines or anything to have any references of, you know, what I could do with my hair or style ideas. So it took a few years before I started to see other examples and like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, it's so beautiful and there's like a diversity in all of these different styles and colors and textures. So it really changed the way that I saw like how my hair could be. My book, I feel that it added to the conversation. I feel like it's given young women, especially young girls, just another way to see themselves. It's the reflection of them, which is something I really wanted. It was really important to me because, you know, I thought a lot about myself as a little girl coloring, which I, you know, I love to color, but I didn't see girls with Afro puffs or girls with braids in the coloring books that I was coloring in when I was a little girl. So I think, you know, even in just a small way, it adds to that conversation. It gives girls and even women, because it's, you know, it's technically an adult coloring book, although I feel like anyone can color in it. Just another example of what beauty is, another face, another reflection of different kinds of ways to be.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I remember when I was 21 and I traveled to Indonesia, and one of the things that struck me the most was that I had no standard for beauty. So everybody looked beautiful to me. And it was so fascinating to be in a place where I didn't have a preconceived idea about what was beautiful. And it totally expanded my idea of what was beautiful. So that's, a sense, like your coloring book, when you can reflect back to other people, this too is beautiful. It helps just bust that open and say, oh.
Yes. I love that. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, I agree. I think it's so important to see ourselves. I was listening to a really great podcast about just tribes and the idea of, you know, your community being able to see reflections of yourself and your interests and style and all these things within your community, because it's a form of affirmation. It's a way that you feel validated. It's a form of survival, even if you want to go back to just, you know, early instinctual survival mechanisms. So
absolutely,
it's something that we need.
Absolutely. One of the things, Andrea, that you said about the creation of I Love My Hair, which took place very quickly, over 60 days. So you were under this tight deadline. You were working on it every single day. And you said that creating so intensely revealed things to you about yourself that you didn't know, that it was a very therapeutic time for you. What are some things that you learned about yourself during that those 60 days?
Well, I realized that I really needed time to, I needed to make sure that I made time to align myself. During that 60-day period, I had a routine, and I was, you know, lighting candles and incense while I was drawing. I was drinking my tea. I was I was more active in my meditation. I was going for walks regularly to make sure that I was getting outside and not just, you know, staying tied to my drawing table. So I learned that I really, really needed to make sure that I made the time to, you know, be grounded, to align myself, to be connected to my spiritual being. And I learned that I needed that in order to thrive, because when I'm not connected, I just, like, things just kind of fall apart. So I learned that was really important to me.
When that time eased up, were you able to keep that same connection and stay grounded in that way?
I tried to, but things kind of sped up after that. So once I finished the book, I was actually teaching one course. So it was the semester started. I fell in love. I met my partner. I finished the book in August. I fell in love in September. And then, my goodness, I was like on a book tour promoting I Love My Hair. I was doing all these interviews and speaking engagements. So it was just going really, really fast. And my like meditation practice and walking, all those things kind of slowed down. And I did experience just being overwhelmed because of that. So realizing that, oh my goodness, I really need to make sure that I have that routine in place for all of these situations where, you know, I'm having a lot of activity going on. I need to make sure that, you know, I'm making time to at least pray or meditate or journal, because it helps me when things get really crazy.
What does your routine look like in terms of setting yourself up for creating on a regular basis?
Well, I have to be honest, right now it's somewhat non-existent, because I'm a new mom, so my creativity happens whenever I can a moment, whether the baby is taking a nap or he's with his dad. So right now it's really, really changed. It's really different. It's actually forced me to be very focused when I do have, you know, an extra moment to work. So I'm really, really utilizing any free time that I have. But before, it really was about, you mean that when I'm carving out time to create?
Like, are there things that are really important to you to have in place? Like, you have anything that you do to get yourself in that space? Or I know once I heard you say that you'll listen to the stories of other women while you're creating, things like that.
Yes. Okay. So yes, whenever I'm drawing or cleaning up things in Illustrator, Photoshop, throwing on a podcast or some interviews on YouTube is my go-to. Like, I love hearing stories from other women about their career paths or their spirituality. So I will always have something like that on in the background. It really, I don't know, it's so inspiring for me. And because drawing is so therapeutic, those, that kind of information kind of seeps in a little deeper, like on a deeper level, and I connect to it even more. So having that on is essential. And then also, I have to have some tea. Like tea and maybe a candle burning if possible is just the perfect way to set up my creative space for when I'm getting some work done.
Nice. Okay, so going back to one last question about I Love My Hair, one of the things that I heard you say about the tour, and this was really interesting to me, so I'll read the quote and then I have a question about it.
Okay.
You, when the book was released, it was released at a time when there was, for one, a New York Times article that had just been written about the lack of diversity in coloring books, and people were really wanting to talk about political issues around race and gender. And in the talk that you gave, you were expressing maybe some frustration around it, that so few people wanted to talk about the creative process, about the ideas and the content and the things that had challenged you in the creating of this book. And what you said was, only a handful were really interested in talking with me about the process. How do I navigate this, not being able to talk about the ideas or the content or the challenges I experienced? I do have an opinion about the lack of diversity in the politics of black hair, but how do I voice my opinion and my interests that really don't fit with the intentions of my book? What if I don't want to talk about diversity? Is that right or is it wrong? Or if I don't see my book as being political, is it okay that I didn't have anything political to say? Do you still feel that way? Does that still resonate for you?
It does. It does. Because I feel in a lot of ways, whenever we are introducing the black body in art or anything visual or anything in general, it becomes political. And sometimes I just want something that can be light and free and fun. And, you know, this was a book for girls and adults, but mainly in my thinking about it was for girls. And I just wanted them to be able to see themselves and to take time to, you know, color and explore their creativity, and in doing so, seeing themselves when they're doing it. I didn't want it to be political. I didn't want it to be something that was this kind of poster for diversity for the publishing industry. That wasn't my intention. You know, it's great that it was something that was created and it does show, you know, a different story or a different face, but that wasn't my intention behind the book. And it did get a little frustrating when I constantly had to, you know, refer to it in that context. And then my own intentions were kind of being buried underneath that.
And
let me just add just the fact that, you know, being a woman of color who's, you know, doing this book, I mean, I just wanted to talk about being an artist and creating something under such, you know, a tight deadline, the story of me, you know, leaving a job and having this opportunity. I felt like there were so many other things that could be addressed around creating this book, that it felt unfortunate that the only story that was coming out was about, you know, it being this, you know, political commentary on diversity or black hair. I thought that there was so much more that could be talked about.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about that is you made this book so that girls could see themselves, not just some representation of something, but they could see themselves in it. And then you became this representation of something. Like the people, it sounds like for you, it didn't feel that people were seeing you and wanting to hear about your experience. So, well, is there anything about either I Love My Hair and then, you know, Becoming Me came out and you have another book that's coming out, like, or is it out?
Yes. So, Young, Gifted, and Black comes out February 1st.
Okay, Young, Gifted, and Black. So of these books and of the creation, is there a question during that time or right now that you wish I would ask you, and I'm not done asking questions, but that you wish I would ask that you don't get asked or people don't think about as much as you want them to think about?
You know what? I can't think of one because my feeling right now is that your questions are so great. I can't think of anything. Maybe I can process that as we're speaking, but no, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So then we will go into Becoming Me, which is in the creation of Becoming Me. Well, first of all, you say that it was a tool for young people, especially girls, that they could use to develop their creative skills while exploring who they are. And I heard you say, you said this book is the book you wish you'd had, that the questions posed in the book are questions you wish someone had asked of you as a teenager. What are some of the questions that you wish someone had asked you?
Oh, man. Well, one of my favorite questions in the book is, who do you think you are? And just asking, exploring, like, you know, just taking a moment to really think about, you know, who you are and what you represent in this world. And I wish that I had spent more time thinking about that as a teenager or as a, you know, teen girl. Because I had a lot to say. I was, you know, thinking a lot and exploring a lot and writing a lot, drawing. But I don't think anyone ever really asked me that. And I think when people, especially adults, when they show an interest in what you're, as you know, a young person thinking about, you're like, oh, my voice matters. I have something to contribute to in, you know, this conversation or into this, you know, this world that we live in. And I think that being able to express that, I guess, to an adult or in a classroom would have been really great, even though I feel like I was expressing that in a lot of ways when I was, you know, doing my writing and doing my drawing. And then I don't really love this question now, but I think as a teenager, it would have been interesting to see what I might have said if someone asked me, what inspires you? Because I don't think I was really thinking about the idea of inspiration then. Yeah,
it's interesting when you said about voice, how we do that. Like when kids are kids, we really discourage them from finding their own voice, and we try to have it be the what we're looking for in the classroom or to behave the way that we want someone to behave. And then when they're adults, we're like, you know, speak freely, express your opinions,
but,
you know, share your voice. I'm like, what voice? I don't know what
exactly
happened. Yeah.
That's such a good point. It's so true because, you know, you can't, it's something you have to develop over time and learning how to express that and, you know, understanding what does it mean to have your own voice. And when you're like in college, all of a sudden the professor's like, oh, you know, express yourself. You're like, what? This is the first time after 12 years of school that someone's asking you something like this. It's shocking. It's like, oh, okay. Although I think, you know, young people today, it's a little different because they have, you know, social media, they have all these different platforms and different ways to express themselves. And you know, people are really curious about their voices. So I'm a little jealous of that.
I know, you know, me too.
Thinking about, you know, me being a teenager and not having that access, but hey, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. But I have two teenagers and I see it and I'm like, oh man, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I'm curious, is that something that you still can like think about, like how do I want to show up, or does that feel like you have a pretty clear idea of that at this point?
I think it's shifting. I feel like I've gone through a stage of transformation. 2017, especially, like, you know, moving to a new country, becoming a mom, doing the kind of work that I'm doing, it's like always changing and getting bigger and bigger. So now I'm in a place where I'm asking, okay, well, you know, is the mission for the work that I want to create the same? do I need to reevaluate? You know, my focus has always been on like women and girls, and now I'm the mother of a son, a boy. You know, does that change the kind of work that I want to create? So, you know, these are all questions that I'm really thinking about right now. But I do think that in essence, my voice will be the same in terms of empowerment and hoping to inspire people, especially people of color. But in what ways I do that, I think is definitely shifting.
I'm curious, with your values being so strong, your mission being so strong, do you find, I know at some point you said, for my professional work, I love to accept projects that follow the same theme, but also speak to social causes. Do you find that it's hard, easy to find the kind of clients that share similar values? And do you find yourself turning work away if it doesn't?
To your first question, the great thing I think about my work is I've established a voice that is very clear, and style is very clear. So when you go to my portfolio site, you see that it's pretty consistent. When you see the things that I share on Instagram or my process on my blog, everything's pretty consistent about the things I want to talk about, the things that I value. You know, the books that I put out too, they also represent that. So I feel like when people come to me, when clients come to me, they pretty much know what they're going to get. So there's an alignment there in terms of, you know, they know that they're going to get like vibrant colors. They know that they're working with someone who wants to empower people. And usually they'll come to me because of those things. So that's been really, really great. I feel like the projects that come to me really pretty much often fall in line with the kind of work that I want to create. Because of that, I feel very confident and okay with saying no to things that do not align with what I want to say or what I want to do. But it's very rare, because usually there aren't product or there aren't clients that are going to come to me with things that just feel completely, you know, off with the kind of things that I want to do.
And I mean, with that consistency, knowing that like the work on your website is consistent, the jobs you produce are consistent, do you ever feel held back by that consistency? Like, do you ever feel that you want to explore in a different way, but there's the concern that you then won't be as consistent?
Yes. Because there was a period after the coloring book came out that I was seen as a coloring book artist. And then all of these coloring projects started coming. Also, just being like a hair artist or trying to think, there was another thing that came out. I was like, oh, no, it's because I produced something and all these projects were coming related to that. But I think I do think that I'm in a place where I want to take more risks. And I think that that really has to come with me, you know, whether it's saying no to a project or just challenging myself within that project and presenting like new and different ideas. I really do think that it has to come from me. I'm also, because, you know, I've been doing a lot of books, and I have another book coming out later in the year, and then potential other book projects down the line. And they are, so there's a project or book project coming out late 2018. It's my first adult book project, which I'm excited about. But there's some other projects that are coming down the pipeline that are children's books. And I'm wondering, is that pigeonholing me? I don't know if that's a word.
Yeah.
Putting me in a pigeonhole.
Yeah.
because I do want to do like adult focused books as well. So just thinking, you know, do I take a risk and say no to a children's book project because I want to, you know, explore other kind of projects? That's something I'm definitely thinking about right now. I don't even know if that answered your question.
It does. It does. And I think it's so valuable, because it just shows that with success, artistic process just continues to evolve. The questions continue to show up and they take on different forms, but there's this constant evolution that happens no matter where you're at.
For sure.
Yeah. One of the last things is you had mentioned that you said, I don't think I ever have attachments to the work that I create. I make it and then I put it out there. I have to understand that this is what I wanted to say and that's it. That's all I can do. Do you have anything around, like any process around letting it go, or is that really not a difficult process for you to just put down to the world and then let it be of the world?
I don't have a process. I will say when I finished my first book, because it was such a new experience for me and because it was an important message that I wanted to just put out there, I did have like a little ceremony, I would say, when I was delivering the final files. So before I pressed send and after I went through all the pages, I printed them out, went through all the pages and just said, okay, this is exactly what I want to put out into the world. I had a candle lit and I said a little prayer and that was it. But that was the only time I did that. I think because all the projects that came after happened so quickly that I don't think I made the time to have that kind of same ending. Mm-hmm. But no, yeah, I just, for me, and I think it kind of goes back to the whole rejection thing and just kind of being open to just putting it out there and just seeing what happens.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think that's where that comes from.
Yeah, it's interesting how it comes full circle like that, but that makes a lot of sense. So as we wrap up here, I have a few things I do at the end, but first I want to let people know you can find out more about Andrea. You can find everything. You can find all her latest work. You can find about what she's up to, everything on her site, AndreaPippins.com. And it's AndreaPippins.com. And it's a beautiful place to go just to hang out and look at all the, like all your most recent work. It's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then I have one final question I asked, but before that, a gratitude. And I want to express gratitude for you because I feel like your commitment to supporting other women and girls, and who knows how this will evolve, in owning their own stories and seeing, recognizing their story, owning their own stories, really comes from your commitment to owning your own story and sharing your story, living into your story from choosing to be a graphic designer when you really knew nothing about what that meant, to going natural in college long before that was a thing, to just the willingness to put yourself out there and be rejected and keep going and keep persisting and then sharing what was true to who you are, to your values, to your mission, to what's important. And in the course of that, letting the whole world be a witness to your story. And that's what gives the space for then all of us to be able to look into your work, and especially little girls of color, women, to look to turn to your work and see themselves and find their own story. So thank you for that, Andrea.
Oh, Daphne, thank you so much. That was really beautiful. I appreciate your words.
Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. And then the last question is, why do you think it's important for people who feel drawn to make something, to follow that, to pursue that calling, no matter how hard it may be, no matter how scary it may be, to pursue it and to make the thing or things, whatever it is, that they feel drawn to do?
I would say do it because it hurts more not to. So even if you make something and you're unhappy with it, even if you put it out there and you feel you're not getting the recognition or the comments or the likes or the visits, or you know, if it's hanging in a gallery and people aren't showing up and that rejection, even if you have that experience, it doesn't even matter. You have to put it out there because not doing so will hurt your spirit. And by making, it's just another step to another making, and that making is another step to another project, another opportunity, another person to meet, another place to go, and it just leads you down an amazing path. You just never know what's going to happen. So I encourage people to just do it, just make.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was really a pleasure.
I'm Daphne Cohn, and you've been listening to the Creativity Habit Podcast. Head on over to thecreativityhabit.com to read this week's profile, Rituals, Routines, and Day in the Life of illustrator Sam Kearney. To read about the daily routines and practices of artists and makers, go to thecreativityhabit.com. You can follow The Creativity Habit on Instagram and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to iTunes Podcast and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And then join me next week for another Creativity Habit podcast. Thank you for listening.